Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
I thought, yesterday when we all started, I think that except for the presenters, most of us felt that we really didn't know much of anything about modern Greek architecture. And now I feel I no longer have an excuse for ignorance because we've had six lectures, and we all know now quite a lot more than we did. And I thought I would try to very quickly summarize a few things that we've learned and heard, and then invite commentary from everyone on some of these issues and subjects. Yes, they can ask questions also, right? We're going to make it very free and open in terms of format.
Can you ask questions, you respond?
You can ask me questions, but my responses are not going to be as interesting as if you ask each other questions. I think Spiros has a couple of burning questions, anyway, right, that I've heard already. But yesterday, we discussed, much to our surprise, I think, that modern, or really current trends in Greek architecture and future trends seem to be very similar to international ones. We all seem to agree that especially the young people, students and young architects, are focusing on sustainability and urban life and social issues, that the digital and virtual worlds have, and internet have brought everybody together. And we found that really there were more similarities than differences. And then today we also saw in a number of the presentations a number of real similarities with the history of post-war American architecture. For example, Constantinidis. Did I get all the syllables in there that time? I've been trying to practice that one. The development of his work runs in parallel in many ways to the American Lou Kahn in terms of his interest in, you know, ruins and vernacular architecture and making it a kind of critical commentary on late modern architecture. And you can also draw parallels to some of the modernists with the case study house modernists of Los Angeles, Pierre Koenig and Craig Elwood, and we can see many similarities and parallels. And for that matter, the development of postmodernism and late modernism and all the critiques. But I thought today maybe I'd ask a little bit about the differences, really, between what we saw in some of the discussion of Greek architecture and differences primarily between maybe Greek architecture and American, but really even differences between Greek architecture and the rest of Europe. And I wanted to talk about it just very briefly in three categories. One was in historical stratification, right? Clearly, this is a very different issue in the U.S., particularly in Los Angeles, than it is in, say, Athens, right, which we saw. The differences between 3,000 years versus at most 300 years are fairly large. And yesterday, a number of the panelists, I noticed, commented on the idea that really everything from the 70s on in Athens should be torn down and started again, whereas there's a very strong movement in the U.S. now to try to preserve monuments and of examples of what we call the recent past, which is the last 50 years. Now, 50 years is a segment of 300, is maybe like 500 years of your past. So there's clear differences about why we would want to emphasize that. But it's also interesting that a number of the modernists that we saw, including Dimitrios, who talked about his own work, are very interested in tradition and interpretations of it as a significant issue in their modern architecture, which I think is another difference from many of the current practitioners in the U.S. The second area I thought people might want to address is the differences in political structure. Certainly, there's differences across Europe. We talked briefly at one of the breaks about how, for example, in Spain and Portugal, modernism was basically suppressed until the fall of the dictatorships in the mid-70s, and there's a huge flowering of modernist work that came out, essentially untainted by a lot of postmodernism. Greece is, again, obviously quite different from the history of the U.S., but very different, again, from the history of other European countries, and it's been commented on that there's a lack of investment or interest by policymakers in architecture. They don't see it as something that increases their prestige and status, and again, there have been many public competitions and plans. Very few have been realized, and I think some more commentary on that would be really interesting. And I'm wondering if it relates to the fact that, except for Doxianis, who had a huge international profile, I've never heard of the rest of these architects. And I think that That, I think, is true. I know that others have commented on that, that this work was really a revelation to me. And I immediately said, where can I get a book on this? I want to see more. And I think that it's interesting, and part of these issues one and two, that this work is largely unknown outside Greece. So I thought that I would like to invite our panel, our original speakers, our guests from Greece, to comment on any of those issues, the kind of really the differences, really, rather than the similarities, what makes Greece and its modern development particularly special or different. And I'd like to invite the Americans, or the non-Greeks, not really all Americans, or the non-absolutely Greek, but people who did not present anyway, to comment also on the similarities and differences that they see between Greek modern architecture and American, or simply on what interested you most today. And I'd actually like to start, if I can, Spiros.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, Madam mm-hmm. Chair, you know, if before we go any further mm-hmm. with your introduction, the last speaker, Dimitris Isaias, somehow has cast a big shadow about the distinction of architecture mm-hmm. of, you know, by discussing the tradition. And, you know, if we look at what determines architecture, we have technology on one hand, and this is now pretty universal. We all share the same technology, same technologies, you know, in the developed world. Then if we look at the climate, yes, it is different, but it's similar between various parts, Greece and California and South Africa and Australia. If you look Nordic climates, you find similarities too. So that takes away, again, another factor of distinction. Then the third element which determines architecture is the human. So what is today's possible source of distinction in terms of architecture? I'm posing it not as a rhetoric question, I'm posing it as a question to all of us, you know.
But Spiros, do you want to pose this in particular to Dimitrios?
Well, it would be a good idea. I have an answer, but I would like to hear. I have my own opinion on that, but I would rather hear his, and if not, then follow a discussion on that.
I think that, Dimitrios, if you'd like to respond to that, it fits into category one. Thank you, Spiros. Right.
Can you define the exact question?
I defined the question? Redefine it.
Yeah, redefine it.
You said, when you showed the example of that village where yeah. I also thought it was Greece,
yeah.
that it was China.
Yeah.
And you made a very good point.
Yeah. That there are you want to comment about that?
There were similarities. So what do you see the possible sources that may generate distinction, you know, of architecture from one part to another part? I mean, thinking what because we all share the same technology now. We share the same materials. Climate, which is another factor, nature that influences architecture, yes, it varies between north, south, and equator, but it does have similar parts of the world which have the same climate. So is there any area that may influence architecture to be distinct yeah. with the topos, with the place okay. where it comes from?
Okay. First of all, I don't believe that we share the same technology. The technologies and the materials, in general, if you speak broadly, yes, we share it. But at the end and the bottom, we are not sharing the same technologies okay. throughout the world, I mean. There are differences.
I'm referring to the developed world because
okay,
you know,
I'm still. For example, there is no this, in Greece remains in a large extent more oriented to some materials than it's for example in the United States.
But so are you saying materials is one area?
No, this is a small remark. The, the basic difference is, I believe, is on the economic structure. They are not architectural, oriented. There is a completely different environment economically. The way the architecture is financed, the undertakers of the building are very critical to the differences of architecture we are seeing. For example, if we go now to places like Dubai, the amount of money that is invested in those buildings that we publicized, it's tremendous amount of money that is invested there for a specific reason. So this kind of investment needs those kind of buildings we are seeing.
Yeah, but are you saying that they are sort of Arab Emirates distinct architecture?
No, I don't want to make that comment. No, I don't believe it's awful architecture.
Well, I'm provoking you.
It's awful architecture, but it's the architecture that it's related to the kind of the investment that is being there. If you want to have this kind of development and you invest those kind of money, you take this architecture.
What about values? What about values of life? Because, you know, the third factor...
We don't share the same values of life.
No, what I'm saying is the third area I mentioned is the humans, you know, and the humans extend from the cultural to the emotional to the perceptions to associations. So what about values that may be helping to distinguish architecture from one part to another? Because I can be very critical. I can analyze your design and say it has some elements of Greekiness in it. The last two houses you showed, for example, I can justify some as possibly narrowing them down, not 100% Greece, but part of Greek, part of it being Greek.
Yes, this I don't think what is this Greekness. Probably is the use of certain materials, probably is the kind of a climate.
Take part.
You. Okay. Dr. Dimitri's finished. Yeah, I'm going to open up in a second.
Okay.
I think that, why don't you finish that thought?
Okay.
And then I think both Eleni and Jurg would like to weigh in. But Dimitris, are you done?
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Eleni, I think you were, and then Jurg next.
The word Greekness or Englishness is not a very operational word because it might. Yes, I should say there are when you are working in the urban context, I think in the future there will be very little differences between, say, a city in China or what we'll do in Greece or etc. But when you are working in a landscape, the landscape has a spirit. It's very difficult to explain, which only an artist or an architect can understand in his own way and express. Although the climate may be in California is the same as the climate in an area in Greece, you'll have different solutions depending upon the specific topos, specific place, the specific quality. For example, Kostadinidis probably, when he wanted to design, he went to the spot and he said, I'm building with the land, not on the land. That's a philosophical approach which has to do with Greek philosophy. I mean, Greek architecture traditionally was very friendly with nature. Before entering, the urban situation. And so the true Greek architecture integrated into nature from the antiquity until, say, the pre-industrial architecture. So this is needs to remain and be expressed at least whenever we can, when we design and when we build outside the cities, or by the sea, or by, monuments. And as you see, Greekness or Greek style, it's not one style, thousands of solutions. It's very different when you are in northern Greece, Macedonia, or if you are in Crete, or if you are in the Ionian Islands, or if you are, in the Aegean Islands. Mm-hmm. It's totally different. It has to do with culture, with history, with the topos, the landscape, and with lots of things. So I think there is still ground for difference. And I think the world culture will be richer if you have difference. Of course, the cities, probably my colleagues will tell you, but even in the cities, there are certain places like Trafalgar Square, which has a character, or Les Champs-Élysées in Paris. Of course, in Athens, we have a problem. Every mayor redesigns all the places. And so if you're in Omonia Square, and I'm an inhabitant of Athens, I don't know where I am. Completely deorientalized. I mean, they have changed it. It's not there. I think we may return.
I think you want to.
Yeah.
Let me just say, if anybody wants to get my attention, they're going to have to, yes, lean forward, make themselves known, because I can't quite see you. Thanks, Jörg. Sorry.
I think Spiros formulated it in an extreme way, but it is the problem of modern architecture that everything is possible. It's maybe even the problem of our time in culture, everything. And that creates all the possibilities, creates a huge uncertainty. Doxiadis would call it a nightmare. That's what we have in our cities. And how do we deal with it? I think we have to go back and see what is still unique. Every society is at a different stage in their development. That's certainly the case. So China is at a different point than Greece, than the United States. We have different heritage, different building stock on which we build, and that certainly makes the future unique in each place. Then the other parameters, nature, people, people's character, they all come into play and they give these nuances of differences between the new architecture. I think we have seen many examples of excellent ways of relating back to the heritage, and that's what it's all about, in my opinion.
Thank you, Jörg. I think that Barry would like to talk next, and then Christine, and then we'll get back to the left side of the table.
Thank you, Judith. I think, first of all, I'd like to thank UCSB and Hellenic Studies, Jim and Sarah, for putting forth a great conference, which I learned a lot in. And secondly, I'd like to say that I think that architecture in the future is going to respond to not only its environment, to the true meaning of the word sustainability. Sustainability starts from the bottom up, of being able to take the community, which is becoming much more diverse, which isn't a pure Greek community anymore or pre-American, you know, pure American white community anymore. And the architecture is going to have to start speaking to the people and make that a comfortable place for them to live, not only as it has to do with a building being something that's sustainable, but the community itself will build from the bottom up. And if you do that, you're going to densify the cores. You're going to create architecture of a higher order and a higher density within the urban fabric. And that material that you use in that building may be slightly different than you do in the suburban or more rural areas. So I think technology will throw us into something that gives us the forms to build within the city, which still have to say hello to that of the past, which was really articulated very well in Demetrius's talk. But I think that what we'll see is the architecture stem from community and from the quality of the environment that it lives in, including the people. So I'd like to have a response as we go down the line from the people in Athens who really are dealing right now with a tremendous amount of pressure and immigration like we are here. Does that mean that we're going to see different forms that will speak to those people? Are the squares going to be like Alvaro Street in Los Angeles, where we speak to another generation of immigration that we have in the United States? And is that going to change our architecture?
Thank you. But, Barry, I think before we move on, I think Christine is going to add something to that and maybe also ask our guests some challenging question that they'll have to think about.
One of the tricky things is you asked to speak earlier and then the conversation doesn't quite go so linear.
Okay.
But, you know, today I looked at, you know, so many images of modern Greek architecture and I started thinking to myself, how is it similar to and different from our American experience? And I wanted to get back to this idea of materials and building technology, because one of the fundamental tenets of modernism is that you look to the structure and you look to that underlying order, and rather than disguising it or ornamenting it, it becomes the expression of the building. And for me, looking at this vast array of work throughout, you know, the second half of the 20th century to today, that were different, rather sophisticated studies of the nature of the concrete frame, is something that I think is quite different from the American tradition. We do have architects in this country who have worked on that problem, but we haven't had an entire culture of architects restricted to that one material vocabulary. Even the very smallest buildings in Greece, buildings that are built by homeowners, are the buildings of the concrete frame. And I think if I had to say the one thing that really flashed in my eye is the thing that is maybe not unique to Greece, but certainly the big difference between American modern traditions and Greek modern traditions is that expression of the frame. And we saw some very interesting variations on this, but it was there throughout in all the work.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think, well, I'm just the moderator. I won't express an opinion. However, I was wondering, in fact, if either Yorgos or Panagiotis would like to take up the challenge about Athens. Yorgos, you look interested.
Well, I feel a very strong urge to redefine architecture as having to do with ideas and not with techniques, and to distinguish again building and from architecture. So I think that what is very different about Greek architecture and the evolution in America during the same period is that in Greece, ideas were few, they were unitary, while in America, ideas were much more pluralistic, much more elaborate, much more erudite, and architecture was a lot more learned than what was happening in Greece. I would like to take on from what Christina said. Mm-hmm. It was, I mean, in Greece we only had the monoculture of the concrete frame. And the concrete frame defined almost everything, and nobody really cared about infusing it with any kind of meaning beyond the denotation of construction and structure. I think that this is a missed opportunity, and that is why architecture in Greece has been so much, let's say, not unpluralistic, but maybe not evolutionary or whatever. I miss learned architecture in Greece. In Greece, architecture has to do too much with craft. We saw an image of Konstantinidis on the building site. And I presume that Konstantinidis, just as Pikionis, were imagining themselves as the primary among builders, which was not definitely not the case with Lucan, for example. Mm-hmm. Nobody in Greece would dare re-elaborate Roman architecture or Byzantine architecture. Nobody would dare propose things like the faculty club where we were here, you know, a few hours ago or last night. I mean, all these rhetorics, these rich rhetorics of architecture are missing from Greek architecture. This may have to do with poor funding, but I'm afraid it has more to do with poor ideas.
Yorgos, it's a very interesting response, actually, and actually to my original question as well as to Christine's, which, I mean, I think, and Panagiotis, I'm going to give you a chance in just a second, but I think that, again, yesterday we seemed to focus on similarities, and I think today, looking at some of the differences, not just between U.S. and Greek, but between some of the panelists, because I know that Eleni, when you were speaking, says, I disagree, and she is about to disagree, but Panagiotis, I thought I'd give you a chance to agree or disagree with anybody here before Eleni disagrees with Yorgos.
I'd like to add something regarding this kind of difference. I mean, if there is a kind of a spirit of place, if there is a kind of reality in architecture, to see that reality, you have to close your eyes. Therefore, the main thing you are seeing in reality is ideas which are unseen, and to really understand the spirit of place, you have to invent ideas, you have to invent spirits, which in mythical world were really figurative, like people, and you had to ask as well Platon for ideas and the idea of metaxis to really see what the real world is. In that sense, in between tradition, as could be defined by Helen, and tradition that was defined by Dimitri, in between tradition in Greece and tradition in China, there are differences that cannot be bridged in any way. Instead, if we are closing our eyes to invent relations or to invent differences.
Right, so to some extent it's a construction of ours, right? Thank you, Panagiotis. And Eleni, would you like to disagree with your ghost now?
Yes. The concrete frame system, Yorgos, had acquired at least once a symbolic meaning, because in Konstantinidis' theory of philosophy, he said he was drew a parallel with the ancient Greek temple with its columns, load-bearing and non-load-bearing elements, and there was a parallel, and there was an inspiration from this sort of building of antiquity, and also not having ideas, so many ideas probably, or being more moderate or not so daring, is part of the Greek architectural culture, and I'd like to use some words, because I won't be able to say it so well. Pericles in the 5th century epitomized this philosophy in his funeral oration. Our love of what is beautiful does not lead us to extravagance. Our love of the things of the mind does not make us soft. He was talking of the Acropolis monuments and of the Parthenon, which is not the biggest, not the most daring, and which is, say, a piece of architecture built on slight perfections. It's a part of tradition. It's not innovative. It doesn't belong to the tradition of the new, but it's still a world masterpiece. So you can produce very good architecture by being moderate and not by being daring. That's...
Well, I have to say something. Okay, Dimitris, before you go, I think Yorgos wants to respond directly, and then I think you next. Yorgos, would you like to respond directly? Sure, why not?
Well, actually,
Dimitris had an exchange. Right.
Going back to this, to my obsession with ideas in architecture, I think that what Parthenon is about is not just refinements, but it is the very strong idea of fusing the orders, of having the frieze, which is an Ionic element in a Doric building, to making a temple, a monument to the people and to democracy out of a temple, to add people and living creatures on a place where only divine creatures had a place to stay. I mean, I think that this is an enormous leap forward, which Greek architecture has not made ever since.
But it took centuries to come to that. I mean, it was through refinements, through this idea was not a new idea.
Yeah, but, I mean, modern Greek architecture is almost 200 years old, and I still miss the leap.
Look, I'll answer you something. You talked about, you presented Balsamakis's work. Balsamakis and many other architects, say, who are not very innovative, they say the problem is not if you have a very good or the best idea, is what you do with that idea. You can
produce good
architecture.
I'm not talking about good or bad ideas. I'm talking
about
pregnant ideas, about dense ideas, about exciting ideas.
Dimitris,
I mean, there are not good or bad ideas in architecture. Everything can be good or bad, but it's about the handling.
Some ideas produce very bad architecture, very good ideas, and vice versa.
What's an idea in architecture?
Dimitris, then Panayotis, I think.
That I was ready to ask. It's very difficult to discuss about ideas, it's difficult to make a real discussion, because, for example, I believe that the building I was showing of Cantonellis in Athens is has a very strong idea. And it's a very... But you from the other hand, in order to understand this idea, you have to understand the language of architecture. Architecture cannot produce ideas in form of papers. The ideas the architecture produce is included in a building. It's like any other form of human it's activity. It's like poetry. Maybe you find there is an idea, maybe you don't. It's the way you read the poem. First. The second, I believe that even for the... for example, Zenetos. Zenetos was making an architecture, was trying to form an architecture based on very strong ideas at that time. So that is not... I'm not... I believe that in some extent you're right, but you must not generalize. It's not, you cannot, I feel peculiar. When you say that there is not produced ideas, I'm starting thinking about Zenetos. Don't you think Zenetos has a strong idea or not in the way that he's doing architecture?
Actually, I think that Zenetos did have a few ideas and a few strong ideas. What concerns me about Zenetos is the materiality, the way that these ideas materialize.
Then you come to my... Then you suddenly...
The whole thing does not fall together.
Okay, I understand it and I believe the same thing. But that's another problem that you cannot... If you stay on the path of ideas, you stay in that path. If suddenly you go to the other path, you're talking about materials. I believe that it's both. It's how the ideas are materialized, and they are materialized with materials. All this play with ideas and materials is the essence of architecture.
I agree.
But I'm not talking about architectural concepts.
Are you talking
just
about...
Just to make it clear, an idea, an architectural idea is not a concept.
Of
it's
course,
something very material. Yes. It's clear what you mean. So we are not speaking for the same things.
But you have...
But is it a question of ideas or is it a question of values that architecture deals with? And that's what I was referring before in terms of, certainly, but the values is the first thing. What are the values that this represents? And I think Yorgos was very explicit about the values that Parthenon expressed, and the materialization of it was the idea that was expressed. So, in that sense, I will use another example for us. The more recent tradition in Greece was not to have big public spaces. We didn't have urban architecture. We didn't have urban spaces. We had simply pathways and streets. I'm talking about the traditional communities, the communities that we inherited in the countryside, the ones I was showing yesterday. They had no public spaces. The public spaces, the squares, they came, if I'm correct, in the 19th century, they came about. And so, the street was actually the place, with the only public space that everything was happening, funerals, festivities, people meeting people in the evenings, sitting in the streets, kids playing in the streets, And I found that is fairly similar to Japan, with traditional communities, where the Japanese also didn't have a tradition of public spaces. The public spaces, as we understand them today, squares, piazzas, and so on, they are a Western European, mainly from Italy, the public space. And that, again, was expressing political systems. Why would you need a big open square, the Piazza Ducale, in Vigevano or St. Peter's, because the church, the authority, wanted a big place where they can collect their believers, or the Duke wanted to have a big space to show his power, his soldiers, his guards. where there were executions, where there were celebrations, coronations, and whatever, you know. And that didn't exist in the 400 years under Ottoman rule in the Greek communities, because, you know, there was the authority were the Ottomans, and the Greeks didn't want to have anything with them, you know. And so they didn't really create big spaces. They were downplaying the religion. You know, the churches didn't have big open space in front of them. So in a way, the way people, the society, you know, the Greek society has operated, you know, for centuries was simply using the streets, you know, as a common ground of meeting. Now, if somehow the way of life of Greeks changes, you know, then, well, I don't want to continue with the squares because, you know, of course life changes and so on, but the way that the Greeks, let's say, begin to use the public square in a way will then determine how you design the public square. And that's what I was referring before, that I think that, Dimitri, I like your architecture, so I wasn't critical. I didn't like the connotation that maybe, you know, that it doesn't have a distinction. Well, yes, there is. Sorry, I won't be longer. Your buildings, you were breaking the scale. So you were actually, that's Greek to me. I feel comfortable. You know, you.
In good context. It's Greek to you, it's in good context, because you know, you understand Greek.
Yeah, okay. But, you know. But, you know, if you showed me a building, you know, which is big, massive, and so on, you know, which is, however wonderful, you know, an urban scale, if you like, major building, I'm not used to that, you know, because we didn't have, you know, and those few that we have, it's in the last 100 years, and they're not necessarily very good examples either, you know. Anyhow, I rest my case. I think you
want to.
Yeah, Toxiadis was mentioned this morning, and I studied with Toxiadis, and he would listen to this discussion, and he would sit there and turn his worry beads, and then at one point he would shoot up and bring his big chart and say, okay, let's localize where you are talking, what you are talking about. And he always would bring it back to the relevance of the issue, and ultimately it's about the people who use our architecture. And here we talk on many different levels. We have sophisticated concept about antiquity. We talk about the vernacular architecture and how we could transfer the lessons into our time. And we forget that 90% of our cities are total chaos, unplanned. None of us has a hand in it. And we don't know what to do. We don't know what to do with our cities for the future. And that's one reason why maybe Greece doesn't want any new towns, because they are afraid that they would get the chaos of the Spanish coast or the French coast, where you have these huge masses of building experiments and the destruction of the landscape. So how do we get back and involve the people? If the people say that we want a certain city, for instance, in Santa Barbara, they say we want a Spanish-looking town. Well, what can you do from that point on? You can fiddle within that and you adapt, but you don't really advance the whole concept of the city to a new level where you integrate the modern technology of the car and everything in a reasonable way. New sizes of people of buildings which are totally out of scale with this urban fabric. You have difficulty bringing them in. For instance, what do we do with our suburban big box buildings and supermarkets in a system like that? These are all the questions which we have to address in our cities and in the modern architecture, and we don't yet have many answers for it, I think. And so for me, that's the question, and that's universal, and we are in different stages of development and should learn from each other.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jürgen. Now that we have a slight pause in the commentary, Apostolos, I'd like to ask a logistic question of you, which is, do we have, originally this was supposed to end at 5, do we have till 5:30 or 5:15 or 5? We have till 5?
We do.
We have till 5:30?
5:30.
Okay, so what I thought, yeah.
But hopefully
exactly.
Some questions from the people.
Well, I thought I would just ask one more and then open it up to the audience. Unless if somebody from the audience has a burning question now, I think we could go straight to that.
But it, yes, we do have a burning question. Why don't we do that? And we.
It's not actually a new question. I'd like to see the answer to the immigration question.
Yes. Ah. Okay, Dimitris wants to take that.
I was thinking to the time he was asking. There is a big difference in the case of the United States with the case of Greece, and the difference is that the vast majority of the Greek immigrants were less than, let's say, 100 years ago, all of them, including the Greeks, were members of the same empire. They were members of the Ottoman Empire. A lot of the immigrants are having exactly the same ideas of using space or of how they react in city life, with the ideas and the reaction of city life that the Greeks are having. At least this is my opinion. There are not so many cultural differences as is the case in the United States, I believe, at least.
Does somebody else want to also tackle the question about the immigration?
Pardon?
There should be answer to the question?
Yeah, sure.
Immigration question?
Yeah, the one that was just asked from the audience, which is brought
that's
up
the serious, the most serious problem our cities and architects will face in the future. And I have given you, this morning I've talked about how the Doxiadis' father and Konstantinidis were either inspired or dealt with the low-income housing. Now I think architectural education should be really concerned about how to approach the housing problems of the immigrants, estimate how many we are to expect in the coming years, and how are we going to deal with this problem? This cannot be dealt with in the star system method or with paradigms from journals or with within the tradition of the new, within the tradition of modernism. It should be faced very, very differently, and I should say that traditional patterns and methods and should also be play a role in this. And the solution should be an anonymous architecture, not an eponymous, and should be based on typical solutions. And this is a very, very big problem and a major issue.
Panagiotis, did you want to respond to that?
Kind of immigration is the other side of emigration. Is two sides. What happened after the dissolution of the Ottoman Empire through 19th and the beginning of the 20th century was the creation of national identities, what means the creations of states, all around the Balkans and Asia Minor. What really happened in 1922 is that a lot of people immigrated from all around what we call now Greece into Greece, but that was Greek-speaking, Greek-thinking, and Greek-believing people, I mean Orthodox people. And the same day, millions of not Greek people, Turkish people, other identities people, have had to emigrate to Asia Minor, to Bulgaria and Serbia, to contribute to the making of other pure national identities. So after 1922 and until the 1990s, we had a rather pure Greek state. We are facing at the very end of the 20th century and the beginning of the 21st century, for the first time after 100 years, the income of immigrants from many countries, many, many countries, and for the first time we have a multicultural population. But from 1922 to 1992 or 1989, we had
a very monocultured state because of that immigration, which was an emigration as well.
Judith?
Barry, would you like to... Just a question, I think.
I'd like to kind of broaden that, bring it back in to focus if I can. Modern, we're talking about modern architecture and contemporary, which is of today. Today is a time of change. And the change that we're seeing today really has to do with a diverse population that is all over the Western part of the world, for sure, not so much in Asia. But what we're looking at today is trying to design, as responsible architects, a building that is not elite, that is not exclusive, that does take in a diverse population, and that will integrate the population, maybe in the same building, that brings and bootstraps those that don't have by being next to those people that have. And so it's really a social integration. I sat with Doc Giottis' school, too, and 26 years ago. Their worry about the United States at that time was that we basically were having a high divorce rate, that we were not passing information to our grandchildren, that our society would fall because of lack of tie between family. I think architecture is something, and earlier in the talks it said that architecture really can't lead and respond and be the icon that makes a community better. I believe it can. So I'd like to hear the panel talk about modern architecture, contemporary architecture, whether it's Greece or here, and how it responds to the needs of our society that's in a shift.
I think we seem to be moving back, which is interesting, back into the notion of kind of universalities and commonalities rather than differences. I mean, the issue you just raised, Barry, is you said whether Greece or here, and the immigration issue seems to be saying that multiculturalism is going to be a big issue in Greece, which it hasn't been, you know, really until the last 15 years. But I would like to ask the panel if, in fact, they would like, if anybody would like to answer or try to answer, or at least address Barry's question. Eleni.
Traditionally, Greeks were more moderate. They could assimilate easier the differences. For example, we have more immigrants and practically the borders are practically open. Whereas this could not easily happen, say, in Germany or in Italy. We're throwing them in the sea when they went from Albania. I hope that our culture will allow us to deal with it. But of course, the problem is in our case, it will be very difficult to have a policy, a strategy, some sort of systematic approach to the problem. I'm afraid it will be solved in a like that, you know, in an inordinate way.
Spiros?
I'm trying to respond, Gary, to your question. I don't think it's very easy. I mean, you know, first to give an answer specifically, I mean, there are certain things that are now universal problems. The environment, for example, you know, and so responding to your word, responsible architecture, no matter where you are, you should try to use less nature. I did say yesterday that I consider that any human act on the land as an anomaly, and so the ideal situation would be to minimize the possible negative effects to nature, you know, land, air, whatever. So one thing is to be more responsible in terms of energy conservation, pollution, and all these things that we're beginning to recognize, I wouldn't say even worried about yet. And that's universal. Then specifically, I think that architecture does two things. One is to addresses how does a building contribute towards the betterment of the environment, the urban environment. So there is that outward, if you like, responsibility of the building. And the other one is how does it cater to the specific needs? And there, I don't think it's so much, yes, there are cultural differences, you know, but on the other hand, you know, there are also differences between homogeneous cultures. You know, some people like to have big living rooms and some people like to have big bedrooms, you know. So there are the individual needs. And so, you know, it's I think more the problem the way you pose the question is how does then the building respond to the to the function to the formation of the urban tissue, the urban fabric. I mean, the answer you got from it was Dimitri, I think, you know, when he said that we have immigrants who come from similar social customs in a way. You know, you go to certain parts of Athens and you will find lots of Pakistanis on the street, you know, at hours that the shops are closed elsewhere, and they are open even though it's not legal to be open these hours. You know, the police doesn't bother them. And for them, it's at the end of the working day, they are there. Some of them are talking to their fellow compatriots to get perhaps a better job or a tip or news from their home country. You see Asian also, East Asian also immigrants, you know, who run their shops, you know. In other words, there is a street culture, if you like. You know, people are not afraid to be out on the street, you know, and up to now at least, you know, for high crime at least, you know, Athens is still a safe place, comparatively, you know. I'm saying high crime, okay, petty theft, I think you find everywhere. So I don't think there can be a specific answer, you know. You see, I believe, I may be wrong, but, you know, at least I believe it, you know, sincerely from my part, that there are two ways you can deal as an architect. One is when you feel you can dictate culture, and I don't believe that. And the other one is how to express the culture. So as life evolves, you know, it's our responsibility then to find the best way to respond to the collective needs, to the social needs, as well as to the individuals when we deal with specific situations, you know, like a custom-made home. Anyhow, that's my initial response.
I'm trying to think who's first in this. Go ahead, we allow Yorgos to go first and then Yurg. Okay, please.
I would like to refer to the issue of immigration and immigrants. Mm-hmm. I think what is important with this is the provision of public space for immigrants and for non-immigrants. And by this I mean free public space. What's currently happening in Greece is that indigenous people have resigned from claiming public space. They can afford to pay for public space, so they are actually using private space as public space, that is, space for common use. So real public space, which was previously used by Greeks, now actually belongs to the immigrants. And since public space is not being taken proper care of, public space tends to be ill-maintained and in a rather bad state. So I'm afraid that this is a real problem because when public space is not well maintained and not well kept and not well designed, then you have crime, and then you have lack of people in it. So it's a vicious cycle. So the important thing is to maintain public space as public in the proper sense of the word, as free public space, and to provide immigrants with the possibility to have symbolic space within this shared public space. But this is not easy. I mean, it has to do with tolerance. It has to do with Greeks tolerating foreigners expressing their views, sometimes in not so subtle ways, and so on.
It's probably not so simple as building a multicultural center like the one we're having this discussion. I know. Jörg, I know that you wanted to comment.
Well, some people maintain that the whole immigration question is a social economic one, and we architects don't have much to offer. But, of course, it goes hand in hand how our buildings and cities are designed. What we as architects can contribute is always the spatial implication of these actions. And through examples, we can inform the discussion. For instance, Candilis, when he built Toulouse-Lemirail, a huge housing scheme in southern France, what happened there, they had an immigration wave from Northern Africa. They just ended their problems with Algeria. And low-income workers came from Northern Africa and occupied this housing which was available, which was designed as a universal international style, in a sense. And the problem was immediately a social one because you had a concentration of one population group. And that again and again creates problems in our society. The problems they have now in France with the suburban youth riots is because they concentrate similar groups in one place, and all of a sudden there is a tension emerging between the French and these groups, and it explodes. And so the result of that, I would say, is you need a certain level of integration and assimilation, otherwise it doesn't work. And I think that's also what you said in the beginning. Do we now integrate in every building, or can we have small clusters where there is a local identity? That's the question, and that's where we have to have examples where it worked, and we have been doing that for many, many decades, and there should be some lessons from that which we could bring into the discussion.
So there's a related issue that I find very, very noticeable when I'm in Greece, which is the population of tourists that occupy the streets and the public spaces, particularly in some of these hill towns and island towns that have qualities that everyone all over the world appreciates. And when you have such a disproportionately large number of people who are using the space as vacationers, who are there and not really, you know, that knowledgeable of the culture that grew to create these spaces, you have a set of similar issues almost to the immigration issues, although maybe not so much from the point of view of their, you know, economic status, but certainly from the idea of how do you make places that are respectful of tradition without the Disneyland problem of its becoming so transformed by the pressures of tourism that it loses that connection to home.
Yeah, and Eleni actually mentioned that issue yesterday. Dimitri, sure, and then I think I can see.
Very shortly, I want to say that underneath all those discussions, mm-hmm. there is an economic issue. There are suburbs of Athens, high-income suburbs, that have vast minorities of people who are coming, for example, for countries that in other areas, but they are rich. They are the same people who come with the same culture, come from the same country of the ex-Soviet Union or whatever, living poor people, living in another area that are considered to be immigrants. The other not immigrants are the persons who are going to supermarkets, buying a lot of things. It's a very peculiar thing. I was referring, there are not big cultural differences, but of course there are class differences. And those differences are very well understood in the city, as it was understood in the 60s, where we're not having immigrants, but we're having persons with tremendous different economic differences, and they were looked this, and we were saying at that time the same thing. For example, Omonia is a big square of Athens. At the 60s, was all the people consider that the Omonia is a bad square because the persons were coming from villages, the poor people are all around immigrants. The same things that we were discussing in the 60s with Greeks. Probably the children of those people that are referring to the problem at Omonia in the 60s, mm-hmm. now they are referring to Omonia because they are Albanians or whatever in Omonia. Sometimes things are not a racist problem, but are problems. Economic and political problems, after all.
I agree with Dimitris, because the refugees in 1922, they were Greeks, and they were very much unwanted in Greece. Even there is an area in Volos, where I was born, they didn't accept them in the city. They made a new city, and it's near Ionia. They were outside Volos. So, but we managed to assimilate this number of immigrants. So it's also a problem of scale. Mm-hmm. How much how many people can be assimilated within a given culture easily without taking specific measures or strategies and things like that. Because in the meantime, I think that the immigrants who are doing well in Greece, such as the Albanians, they are slowly entering the urban fabric. They're inhabiting the a block of flats, not the very central ones, mixing with Greeks. Some Greeks are not very happy about it, but they can't help it, so it slowly moves. The thing is that what do you do with these uncontrolled waves of migration, and what do you do when the number of men is above a point that you can be assimilated?
Well, it's a question we deal with every day, I think, especially in Southern California. But Panayotis, did you want to say something? Or
no, better no.
That was a no? Okay, but I think can we take questions from the audience now? Because I saw Apostolos has gotten the mic, so that makes it possible.
Is this on?
I don't think so.
Is this on?
No. Now it's on.
Okay, I'll speak as an immigrant to Greece, in fact, where I live as much as I can. Other immigrants from other countries, such as Pakistan, the Philippines, Ethiopia, that I've spoken to, say that they feel very welcome in Greece, that they like being in Greece, that they don't have certain problems they've experienced elsewhere. But one thing, I suppose, I'm not sure where these people live, but I suppose they're not building houses in Ekali. They're probably not building houses at all, and so the architects probably don't get involved at all. But Nea Ionia and Nea Philadelphia in Athena, sorry, in Athens, in other places, at the time of the Asia Minor catastrophe, were, as far as I understand, the state came in and they built places for these people. I don't know if any of that's going on now, but it seems to me that if some of that were to happen, then there might be a role for architects. I wonder if there's any comment on that, if there's any possibility of that happening.
Actually, there's a filtering down or filtering up, depends on how you look at it, with immigrants. Today's immigrants, they are not creating, because there is, at the time of 1922, there was a lack of number of housing. So we need housing at that time, so they have created those suburbs, satellite suburbs, and there was a mechanism for the development of the city of Athens and other cities of Greece. Today, there is a pool of houses in the center of Athens, so there is a process of people living in those places and
relocation.
Yeah, reallocation, or filtering up or filtering down, depending on how you look.
Panayotis does want to speak
now. That, from time to time, if the state is building houses for refugees, that means that somebody is paying for these houses. And during the 30s, that this the one who was paying was not Greece. That was international money coming to Greece to help building houses, settlements for refugees. You will understand that nowadays nobody is paying for building housing for Pakistani. The other side of this controversy has to do with the national identity, which is very strong in Greece. We say that our civilization is very strong. We are assimilating other civilizations. We are exporting civilization. Yeah. We can export civilization as far as India, and we have done so for many, many, many centuries, 3,000 years ago. We have to understand that kind of national schizophrenia, where people is thinking that they are something special. We have a tradition. We have the Greek tradition. It is a tradition which has no end and no beginning. It is something going through eons of time. It's not stopping. And it is always coming out again and again, and it's not really changing. It is a perennity. So things are not always that way. And in many, many other national identities, there are many, many other people living together and making the kind of culture we can see all around. To come back to the idea of building and class differences, it is true that nowadays immigrants, Pakistani, who have their own Pakistani town, are not building the houses in Cali, but they are building the houses in Cali. And
not the Pakistanis.
Not the Pakistani, but Albanians. Nothing really changes in this. What is the real difference is that in the 1980s, Greeks were building the houses of Greeks in Cali. Now Greeks are building really nothing in Greece.
I always think somebody should do this, you know, and they are doing it in some areas, you know, in the center of Athens. And I think that's going to happen because of, you know, because people, their immigrants are poor and they have nothing but ideas and they need a space to live, you know. What do you think?
I think you're right on. I think part of the sustainable city is the reuse of buildings. But I also think that as we look at the architecture, getting back to what Judith was really asking in the beginning, the contemporary building in the case studies in the United States was about building systems, about how you glaze frames and how you were able to build something that was almost a module. I think there's another question in this whole thing, too. In contemporary society, are we leaving behind, and I think it was Helen that said the great thing, you know, ruins are trash. And I wonder if contemporary buildings can be designed to be remade and to be moved, and so that as generations after us are able to remake the city, that we've given them tools to do that with. I think the post and beam houses, the concrete frames, the things that we're looking at, are very much theater, glass, open, place for people really to romance with the exterior. But at the same time, when you get in the urban environment, then is the glass box really something that works? And are we, because the Greeks were behind walls years ago, and so were the Romans. And as we look at contemporary architecture, it has to start fitting. It's changing societal pattern. So part of it will be the reuse of buildings. Part of it will be maybe designing things that the architect will design buildings that heal, that will essentially be healthier, but also can be remade. I don't know.
I think that, Spiros, why don't you respond to that briefly, and then I think instead of asking everyone to respond, because I think there are three more people who want to ask questions, we'll move on. But if you could take that.
I just wanted to follow up what you said, you know, that it has been happening in Athens. Mm-hmm. Central Athens had quite a lot of apartment buildings, and the commercial area was quite well defined. As Athens grew from 1 million, roughly speaking, in the 50s, in the early 1950, to 4 million by 1970, then all of a sudden, you know, we had developments of some other local centers as well, but there was an expansion of the commercial services in the center of the town. So in the major streets, these 5 or 6-story apartment buildings, which on the ground floor had apartments, which were always less expensive, so there were living people at the same building who up in the penthouse would be having quite a high income, and then on the ground floor there would be people living who had quite moderate or quite a bit lower income, if I can say. Those apartments became undesirable initially because of the increasing traffic. And so where there was more exposure, those became shops. They were converted to shops. Originally they were converted to offices. Engineers, lawyers, you know, accountants, you know, took over possession of those apartments. As the law does not define, you know, strict zones in Greece, you know, the building law simply says you can't have this or that, but you can have all the other uses. So essentially, you know, noise and polluting type of activities are excluded from residential buildings, but they can be turned into offices and they can be turned even to shops. So first generation of changes was offices in the ground floor. Second generation, as there was an increasing exposure on some streets, were to become shops, and the offices moved on the second level and third level. And in the downtown now, there are, I would say, from the fifth floor upwards, sixth and seventh in some of the buildings that were built more recently were higher. They are still residential and quite expensive, you know. The noise doesn't reach them as much. Mm-hmm. They have quite nice views, you know, and actually there's the fifth elevation, you know, that sort of... And so we've seen that transformation taking place. Mm-hmm. And some cases even, you know, we saw a whole apartment building, its first three or four stories being taken by a small department store chain by piercing it inside. And since you come quite often, James, to Athens, in Kolonaki, you know, a couple of smaller department stores like Roussos, I think, or something, they're in apartment buildings. So there is this kind of transformation that mm-hmm. takes place. And in a way... if ever, you know, in Greece they will apply some of the laws that are applicable here in terms of environmental impact assessment, if you propose a new building with reinforced concrete frame, they can take down the walls, and companies will soon start buying maybe a whole block and redeveloping it, you know, without necessarily... demolishing, because demolishing will generate a lot more pollution and problems to the city. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it is happening. Thank you.
Thank you, Spiros. I think we have a few more questions.
Yeah. I appreciate that there is a lot of pressure from economy, politics, immigration, all of these that could be directed to how architecture has evolved, like in every other fashion of life. But what I would be interested to ask the panel is, what are the architectural philosophy that is driving evolution in architecture? When we teach students in architecture about architecture, we make them aware of these other factors, but we teach them some fundamentals of architecture and how they will evolve out of that. And I don't think we have touched on that aspects.
Who would like to take that? We're looking down at Yorgos and Paniotis.
I will ask you a question. Do you think that there are some kind of fundamentals we all know and we could all agree and teach to our students throughout schools of architecture, or on the other way, we can agree on our differences and our contradictions? I think that during the 2 days, we have shown people that we cannot agree and that maybe there are no such kind of fundamentals in architectural philosophy, ideas or concepts which could be common in our way of thinking. On the contrary, there are... roots which are going and crossing in many ways. So there is not a good answer to your question. In my,
I think Jurek wants to take that. I think that we want just one more response and then a new question. But Jurek wanted to respond to that one.
I think there is an answer. We can't give all the answers to the problem, but architectural education can provide a much better preparation. What we have to do is foresee certain trends and issues which we have to address in our schools. And the newer ones are sustainability, ecology, how that influences the field. Shifting to the urban issues rather than just teaching about the individual objects is a very, very important part, because you cannot address many of these problems we have addressed today without looking at the whole context and the urban scene. And so that has to be included in the education.
With the technology, we have to get to the level of the newest innovations, and we have to prepare the students for that. So I think the schools are trying to go into these two directions and prepare the student for the future. One problem I see in most architectural education is that the schools don't systematically assess what these directions are. And all of a sudden, new demands are posed on the education. For instance, when the computer came in, the student had to be trained. They took a huge amount of their time and the efforts of the school. Nobody addressed that and said, okay, do we have to expand the curriculum or do we drop something? Mm. So they randomly dropped certain areas so the students don't learn to draw anymore, for instance, in the extreme. So we lose areas in a random fashion, and that's, of course, in the long run, absolutely not sustainable, I may say.
That are impacting many fields, they have to adapt. So in any fields, people have to learn to use a computer. It's not unique in architecture.
No. It is. What I'm saying is that to start making the trade-offs. For instance, if you teach double the amount of material in the same curriculum, how do you do that? Well, there are some ways. For instance, certain programs which you wanted to drop could be taught in a canned way. The students are self-learning, and so you don't have to devote the whole class to a certain topic and things like that, so that you teach it much more efficiently and have a curriculum which covers all the relevant bases. That's what I'm trying to achieve here.
Right. I think we should move on to the next question, because this is there's an entire table full of architectural educators here who all have very strong opinions about this very large issue, so we should move on. Yeah.
Well, this kind of escapes this topic, but I think since this is about modern architecture and it's indisputable that modern problem is the change in the environment, I was wondering to what extent you think it's important to take into consideration or perhaps even give priority to ideas that reduce the negative impact on the environment, and to what extent an architect should shape his or her ideas to fit and perhaps be solutions to environmental problems.
Can I just make a comment before I open it up? Yesterday, on the panel we had, which was talking about modern trends, this was actually one of the things that a number of the panelists identified as one of the common trends among young people in Greece and certainly in the United States as well, this idea that there should be a focus on sustainability, on social issues, and on urban life, you know, and issues to do with humans. So I think there seemed to be great agreement, at least yesterday. Today, not so much agreement, so we'll see, at least about that issue being extremely important. But who would like to take that? Barry?
Our young architects coming in teach us about sustainability, and they're becoming LEEDs rated. And they want the office to be green. And they're pushing the older architects in the office. Mm-hmm. They're coming in with new ideas. They're coming in wanting to make the buildings something that they weren't in the past. We want the students that come out of school, that come into our office, to be trained in social engineering in a way to understand how people relate to each other, how space relates within an internal form, and how teach us how the buildings will in the future become more sustainable. So it's really a priority. It's a priority of the youth. It's a priority now of the aged also.
So, Apostolos, I think Christina is going to make a very quick comment, and then we'll take one more question.
I just have, for the people at the table who practice architecture in Greece, how do the incentives in Greece to build green compare to the incentives in, say, U.S. or other European countries? Are they, you know, about even? Are they behind?
Are there any incentives in the United States to build green?
No, in Greece.
How do the incentives compare?
I don't think that there is any incentive.
Is there like client demand?
Other than moral incentive.
Moral incentive. Yeah. So there isn't a shift in building codes toward energy?
I don't know if
energy.
Anyone knows. I think it's only moral.
Well, it is this, some regulations about the insulation and things like that.
But not incentives, regulations.
Yeah, I mean, it's mandatory. It's not...
Okay.
One last question.
I made a mistake. There are two, Professor Theophanous and Patroclos.
Hold on. Two questions from the audience.
That's it.
Yeah, that, and that will be it. Right.
I have more of a pragmatic question, basically. Mm-hmm. I think I might be addressing half the panel, but our visitors from Greece. Question is based on some recent observations in Greece, mm-hmm. and it's sort of threefold. First part is, what do you think of the existence or the maybe the absence of building codes in Greece? Because somebody mentioned building codes. And looking around quite a bit, I didn't find any building codes in Greece. Or the ones that I found were very, very, very simplistic and did not cover. They created more problems than solutions, actually. My second question is, what do you think the new architect or the architects that have been around for a while in Greece, what is their role in a city, specifically in Athens, which what my observations are based on, that they seem to be basically the guy or the gal that works for that construction development guy that just makes up the some drawings for something that I have in mind because I basically want to create a development that will make a lot of money. Because I saw that in Greece, that the architects don't have sort of like a higher elevated status compared to here, at least, and my understanding here.
Surprise to us.
Yeah. Right? And the third is, do you think there is pressure from the clients, your clients in Greece, to sort of change your designs or your ideas or do things that you otherwise wouldn't do to take advantage maybe of some, let's say, loopholes in the codes and create something that shouldn't be there, but they want it, the customer wants it, it has to be there, we have to make it happen. And how does that reflect on everything that you do and what ends up being built and what people see? So that those were.
Okay, so who wants to? Paniotis?
I'll try to answer. I wouldn't make any differentiation in between Greek answers and European or international answers to your questions. I feel it is the same if you are looking to these problems from Germany, from Greece, or from Italy. There are always problems concerning architects and clients. But regarding the codes, regulation codes, to begin with this, the Greek regulation codes are very well defined in my mind and have been so for the whole 20th century. They are almost the same as German codes, and they have to do nothing with the final result of architecture, which is the result of the interaction of economy, society, architects, and clients. So it's not really a problem of regulations, not really a problem of people, good or bad architects, good or bad clients. It's rather a kind of mentality. Even the idea that you have that there are no codes, no regulations in Greece, in Athens, it's much more a constructed idea, a kind of interpretation of reality than the reality. And that's a real question. To come back to something else, we will all of us agree about sustainability. We are teaching all of us sustainable architecture. Nobody will admit that he is trying to educate against sustainability, but we do not agree about sustainability. That's something which makes a real mm-hmm. distinction between positive sciences and practical sciences. And architecture is rather a practical science. What do you
mean? Lady and then Dimitrios. And then we have one more question. So two more brief answers.
One answer
brief
is that the role of architects, town mm-hmm. planners, I wanted to say it yesterday, is very marginal in Greece, much more marginal than in Europe and in the States, I believe. I have to ask my colleagues, of course. Dimitrios will tell you because he's a practicing architect. This is a marginal role, and also it's also a matter of land ownership. Land does not belong to the municipality or to the state, and it cannot be easily controlled. It belongs, it is small land ownership and small scale of construction businesses. So this affects the image, the landscape, the urban landscape, completely different scale. Now, Dimitris will tell you about the building regulations and codes.
I want to say something. There's a political problem in the code problem. They are inflexible. There is, for example, I know a lot of codes in the United States. They have some flexibility. Flexibility that's negotiable with a developer, with the local administration, for example.
Sometimes.
Which is not sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes, depends where.
Which is not the case in Greece. In Greece, are very inflexible and sometimes are irrational, over-regulated a lot of things.
Very detailed.
This sometimes creates a parallel movement, because if something is irrational and inflexible, this creates an alibi to someone to overpass it. This does not mean bypass it. The second thing is about this thing about developer client, and this is it's a kind of a myth. There are clients which are good, they are bad, they want to interfere with the work of architects, but from the other hand, I believe that you have to negotiate with everything. No, and there are limits to everything you're making. You are setting the limits that you work with in every profession, not only in architecture. I don't want to say anything else.
I would really like to thank both the audience and the panelists, and thank everybody for talking primarily in English for the few of us who do not understand Greek, and turn it over, I think, to Apostolos. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.